Herzlich willkommen zu den Marketing Pioneers. Wir sprechen heute über ein super relevantes Thema, das in Deutschland bisher viel zu wenig Beachtung fand, und zwar MFA, Made for Advertising Sites. Das sind Webseiten mit, ja, ich würde sagen, minderwertigem redaktionellen Inhalt, die häufig über Clickbait ihren eigenen Traffic generieren und welche dann meistens mit Ads überflutet sind. Auch euren Ads vermutlich. Und die Frage, die man sich dann natürlich stellen muss, welchen Wertbeitrag bringen solche Seiten im Branding oder im Performance-Marketing, oder ist es einfach nur rausgeschmissenes Geld? Kleiner Teaser, ja, ist es. Und die Gretchenfrage, wie ich finde, überhaupt, ist dann, wie man solche Seiten überhaupt erkennen kann. Dazu habe ich mir heute einen echten Experten aus den USA eingeladen, daher heute auch eine englischsprachige Folge. Ich spreche nämlich mit Rocky Moss von DeepCIO. Rocky beschäftigt sich seit vielen Jahren genau mit diesem Thema und wir sprechen unter anderem darüber, was MFA-Seiten überhaupt sind, wie man diese erkennen kann, mit oder ohne spezielles Tool, welche DSPs am meisten betroffen sind, wie groß der Schaden aus Rockys Sicht ist und ob vor allem kleinere Advertiser, also auch welche, die beispielsweise nur über Google Ads einkaufen, oder auch größere oder vorwiegend größere Advertiser mit DSP betroffen sind. Und ich erzähle euch eine Story, wie ich durch Zufall sehr erfolgreiche MFA-Unternehmer aus München kennengelernt habe und gemerkt habe, okay, das Thema ist wirklich da. Das ist relevant und es ist ziemlich groß. Von daher Pflichtfolge für alle Display- und Programmatic-Experten, als auch SEAs, die mittlerweile Display-Inventar über Google Ads beispielsweise mit PMax oder Demand Gen einkaufen. Und natürlich auch für Marketing-Entscheider mit Budgetverantwortung, die ihr Budget zielgerichtet ausgeben möchten und nicht auf irgendwelchen dubiosen Seiten verschleudern wollen. Von daher bleibt dran, hört rein, jetzt geht's los.
Digitales Marketing bedeutet nicht nur Werbekontakte einzukaufen, sondern auch Werbung intelligent und personalisiert anzusteuern. Dabei liegt der Fokus immer stärker auf den NutzerInnen. Gleichzeitig müssen Unternehmen trotz veränderter Rahmenbedingungen und schnellem Wandel die Effizienz im Marketing unablässig heben und up-to-date bleiben. Daniel Distler spricht mit führenden Online-Marketing-Experten über deren Strategien und zeigt Schritt für Schritt, wie gutes Online-Marketing funktioniert.
So, hi everybody, welcome to this special episode of Marketing Pioneers. Thank you, Rocky, for joining this episode about made for advertising websites. That's the topic we want to talk about today. So before we deep dive into the conversation and everything about MFA, what are you doing? What's your business and who are you?
Yes, thank you very much for having me. As you mentioned, I'm Rocky Moss, CEO at DeepC.io, and our business is rating publishers across a huge breadth of tests for appropriateness for advertising, and we base those tests right out of DSP and SSP policy documents. So we help enforce policies that are otherwise unenforceable.
So, and that's also, thank you, Rocky, and that's also the topic about today. So maybe that our listeners understand a little bit better how you came to it. So maybe you can describe in some sentences. So how did you came to this topic of MFA? I mean, that's now your business model, right? But what was your journey before starting DeepC?
Yes, good question. So I have a degree in theater. I was an actor for a long time, and then my friend got me a job at an advertising agency working on their traffic quality team. And I just sort of became obsessed, really. I've always been a technology hobbyist, let's say. And I have a lot more experience breaking tech than I do creating solutions. And we were responsible at that agency job optimizing campaigns based on reporting from the popular tools for tracking IVT, those being at the time IAS and DoubleVerify. Moat was very popular with viewability coming into the conversation a lot. And we, paid quite a lot in minimum for these tools, and still there would be fire drills. And when that happened, usually we found it was publisher fraud or something that basically tags are not appropriate to detect. There's a lot of stuff. I won't get into too much detail right now. But between then and now, based on my obsession and talking about and writing about these topics, I got a job at Pixalate writing detection algorithms for CTV and mobile app fraud. But still, I saw kind of a hole in the intelligence marketplace, and I thought it would be best served by actually visiting websites and talking about how they behave, you know, at scale, and more so visiting the popular sites that are not ad monetized to see how they connect to ad monetized ones, those being like porn sites, piracy sites, the places people actually go when they open up their web browser and they type in like, you know, free movies now. I mean, it was very important to us to understand how those visits connect to the, you know, quote unquote premium ad marketplaces, because that was something that was a very common thread when there were those aforementioned fire drills at my first job. That was a common thread, and we wanted to sort of close up that loophole.
Mm-hmm. Okay, get it. Thank you. So if you would describe like your one of your friends that isn't in digital marketing, what you're doing, so in a very simple way, so how would you describe made for advertising as a topic? So what's the topic all about? So who's benefiting from it? How does it work in a very simple way?
Yeah, sure. As with specific regards to made for advertising sites, depending on who I'm talking to, maybe they're more interested in the economy. It's simple arbitrage, economic arbitrage, being, you know, what, buying one currency from one trader, selling it at another desk where you can get a more favorable price. The same is true of made for advertising in large part. They're exploiting asymmetries between the cost of traffic and the value of human traffic that they can you know, monetize when once they bring someone to their website.
So when I'm going on Facebook, for instance, I often see posts around like, so what I would describe as clickbait, something like, you won't imagine how celebrity ABC looks today, or after this photo, the father of this family recently saw something very spectacular. And then you, yeah, like, you want to click on it because you want to know what it's all about or how the celebrity looks today. So, and then you often come on websites that are full of ads, some content sites. I mean, we're talking now a little bit about the rating then in the next minutes, but or how those sites look like. But is this already MFA, or is this the topic basically we are talking about today? Described from just one inflowing channel, which is Facebook in this case.
Sure, yeah, that's something a lot of people have experienced, I'm sure, and are familiar with. And a lot of the times, yes, I think what you're describing would be considered MFA. The practice there being, especially if you've clicked a promoted post and you follow through to the content page and it's overloaded with ads and the refresh time is egregious, chances are, yes, they're just exploiting the exploiting you to make money at, you know, a low cost of acquisition.
But still, I mean, okay, understood. Now we are talking about MFA and in regards also to clickbait, getting traffic from, for instance, social media. But still, I'm talking about human traffic now, right? So somebody like myself seeing this post wants to click on it. I'm going on this content site. Okay, then I'm like fully loaded with ads that even are often below the fold, so I won't see them. But then again, I'm asking myself now, are we just talking about like clickbait traffic in this case, or some other sort of organic traffic that is human, or are we also talking about bot traffic today? So, or is this a combination of both maybe?
Good question. There is still an open debate there. There are two schools of thought. One is bot traffic is not necessary for this form of arbitrage to work because humans can be acquired for relatively low cost and they're easier to monetize. It's basically, there are fewer people to trick if you're monetizing a real human, because naturally advertisers leverage many, many tools to detect bots, many different tools. We'd have to assume that they're all not good at their job if they're not detecting bot traffic. We also have to assume that the platform which is on which this you know, MFA proprietor has purchased their you know, their campaign to deliver you to their site, we have to assume that they're not checking for bots as well, even though these businesses are, like, you know, contingent on delivering healthy traffic. So there's just so many layers of bot scanning going on between, say, Facebook, Meta, and the content page, when the only way to basically rationalize that bots are the majority of the activity is to say that Everyone in the supply chain is doing their job poorly at detecting bots. So rather than mount that argument, I prefer to argue from a place where we just assume that it is human traffic. Assume that people are doing their job right for the most part with regards to catching bots, and sort of explain it that way.
Okay. So assuming that we are mainly talking about human traffic now, as an advertiser, I could say, okay, I got an impression on this MFA site. So what's the problem?
Yeah, that's a very fine question. Speaking from experience and having done many audits for advertiser prospects and our clients, we just see that the return on ad spend is really, really poor in these environments. And I could, you know, I would venture to attribute that to the ad experience, and that like a particular ad has a really poor chance of standing out, especially given situations like you described, where maybe like video loads below the fold rather. And, you know, refresh timing is faster than what's largely accepted by DSPs and SSPs. And the, you know, there's so many ads on page before the next refresh, you don't even really have a good chance to see them all. Or you're clicking through a slideshow and the ads don't even have a chance to load, because really the content in a lot of these is just images. Maybe there's a little bit of text, but, you know, like the example you cited, like, you won't believe what this person was wearing or something. You know, we're talking about very image heavy content, largely galleries or, you know, huge single pages, you know, chock full of scraped images. And there's not a good reason for someone to keep your ad in the viewport very long at all. So basically, even if it's a human, your ad has a worse chance of performing, achieving its desired goal in this environment.
Okay, so regarding ad awareness, this is really crappy content or really crappy place to be shown at.
If you have an attribution model, or you have a KPI that's something like viewability or like last view, or, you know, basically it's really easy to get, you know, people thrown into a cookie pool if they're doing so based on having seen your ad on an MFA site, just because there's so many ads. They may not truly be engaged or part of the audience you're trying to reach.
Okay, so if I'm not aware of this topic, and maybe part of my programmatic advertising is placed on this those MFA sites, it could lead to a misleading attribution model, right? At least for display or programmatic advertising.
Yeah, even ignoring attribution, like one of the things that has come out about these sites is that usually it's highly viewable advertisement. So they sort of exploit the known KPIs that are not tied to like a conversion. Every advertiser agency I've talked to and run audits for that has a conversion event, which is strongly tied to a user intent that is like add to cart, submit a lead form, purchase. Like those things are very clear to those kind of buyers that these sites don't work for them. So really they exploit mostly brand marketers may not have such a strong conversion event to look to for truth.
Okay, makes sense. So also talking about performance marketing now, I assume that most of those ads won't be clicked, right? So if I'm talking about click attribution, that's what you said basically, in a conversion approach, then I won't see much clicks as well as conversions after having placed those ads on those sites, right?
Right.
Okay, get it. So I had an experience in the past, maybe I can talk about it a little bit. That's also one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast today with you. As you know, I was in a startup about bot detection in the past. And on one day, I was invited to a startup founders meeting. And there were two guys I had a conversation with while eating. Basically, I didn't know them before. So they introduced themselves and told me a little bit what they are doing. And basically, it was MFA at scale. So that was in Munich, by the way. So I talked to two entrepreneurs from Munich, and they told me a little bit about what they're doing. So that they had a yield management, that they generated traffic from different traffic sources, organic, sometimes paid. And it was really shocking to me. they had 50 people in their company. So 50 people, obviously.
Wow.
Where they paid salary to them. So I don't, of course, know how much revenue they made, and they didn't tell me, but that was the moment I thought, okay, MFA is real, because those guys just told me this evening that they are earning lots of money with this, I don't know if it's a business model, but with the scam, maybe is a better description. And I wondered, so if you are talking about like this this experience that I had with them, how big is the problem? Could you describe it? Like talking about marketing dollars, so in total digital marketing, or maybe just looking at programmatic, don't know what you have in numbers, but can you describe a little bit how big is the problem in terms of damage, marketing dollar damage?
I can speak in terms of rates that are sort of, the aggregate of audits I've done for people across varying geos, but I have found that the biggest difference in what these, prospects or my clients' exposure is the DSP they choose to use. That's, I can speak to our experience. We work with the Trade Desk, for example, and they aggressively filter out suspected MFA, not using not only our tools, but they work with, Jounce as well, another consultancy in the space who provide an MFA product. So like it's, that demonstrated, I think, their commitment. However, when we're talking about clients who are buying mostly through DV360, that's where the exposure can be highly variable and tends to go up. The normal I'm seeing is between 10 and 20% of ad spend. And I think for
programmatic, right?
For programmatic, yeah. Correct. Even for some PMPs, you must be careful because like they're often, there's a phenomenon of a subdomain rental or mini sites. That's where a otherwise reputable domain spins up a arbitrage subdomain that's used explicitly for that purpose. Generally I find that PMPs are safer within reason. Still, I have folks deploy block lists in those cases. And I think that's okay. There's sort of a conflicting and incentive for DSPs that also have a huge supply arm. So I think that's kind of like where the problems arise. It's just generally...
Let's not yet talk about solutions. We come to that in a few minutes, but more about the problem statement. So as far as I understood, you're saying 10 to 15% of the programmatic open market inventory, right? So... if you're taking DV360, AppNexus, or any other big DSP, is there a difference between DSPs as far as you can say? I mean,
yes, definitely. That's where I've seen the most differentiation in performance. I think it must speak to perhaps a leadership culture. That we have been approached by several of the larger ones. And I know that, for example, like Basis by Centro is deploying Jounce's product. We work with another of the largest outside of Trade Desk and DB360, which I can't speak specifically to this deal, but we are increasingly hearing from DSPs. And that's great for me because I think they can solve so many problems for people.
Okay. The DSPs want to solve it, but it's not solved yet, you're saying.
It's kind of been the problem of... passing the buck. It's sort of like, whose problem is it? For a long time, you see SSPs point the finger at DSPs, DSPs point the finger at SSPs. And then there are sort of like managers who are kind of an intermediary who have an incentive to do better, like to differentiate their inventory. So those managers tend to put more protections in place than say the SSP alone. Again, I don't mean to take us off topic, but it's sort of just a whose business model aligns with adding, this protection. And it's not always, I'd say like SSPs, but the only ones who would like really want to do this are very principled to do so.
So looking again at the advertiser landscape, we have like bigger advertisers and for sure those are the ones that are spending millions in programmatic advertising. So I would assume that those have the biggest problem. Still, if you're a smaller advertiser and you're not using a DSP at all, but you have like some meta campaigns, right, with Instagram and Facebook, maybe you're doing a little bit TikTok and then maybe a little bit Google Ads with Performance Max as campaign type. Is this a topic there as well? Because I get display, at least for Google Ads, I get display inventory mixed into my campaigns as well. And I'm not even able to say how much I want to have on display versus video versus search versus discovery and so on. So how would you is the problem there with smaller advertisers versus bigger advertisers?
I think that the problem is discussed in terms of larger advertisers most often because they get the most space in the global conversation. But I think it affects disproportionately small advertisers because they have less access to transparency. You know, you get different tools when you're spending a lot of money on Google's platform versus if you're spending just a little. Like you mentioned, you have issues properly, determining what channels spend should go to in PMax. And I assume you have the same problem getting transparency on where the money was spent in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
So I think in that case, it's harder for a smaller buyer has to do more work to get the same level of transparency. And that's what's tough.
Okay. So looking at an MFA site, you didn't really see most often big advertisers versus small advertisers, but everything. But you're saying that small advertisers are threatened the most because they don't have the tools to recognize it and tackle it, right?
We see a lot of large multinational brands appear on those sites, and that's for sure. But it's hard for me to say which small advertisers would be seen in a global sense. They tend to run much more like regional ads, maybe targeting more specific audiences. So I can't really speak to the larger trends as to how much of it is big versus small advertisers who spend is going there. But I would wager a guess that it's disproportionately small advertisers who support it, though. The ads that you're most likely to see are the multinational brand marketers, just by virtue of them being having such a large breadth of people they're trying to reach. And I think that the problem is exacerbated also a bit by retail media network buys, which have sort of taken us backwards in terms of transparency. A lot of them say maybe they're buying through Amazon ads, retail media network, and it's you've seen a lot of those sort of ads appear there to sort of fill up the space between from those who have cut off their spend.
Mm-hmm. Okay, get it. So actually, in preparation of this podcast episode, I checked some of the MFA sites I bookmarked in the past, especially from Facebook, and checked for brands. Basically, what I saw in Germany is every big brand. I mean,
yeah.
I don't even need to start because basically I saw everything, every big brand. But also, as you're saying, smaller companies. So maybe it's the same in Germany. By the way, do you have any experience in the different markets? I mean, is there a difference between the 10 to 15% that you just mentioned, probably in the US versus EU or even Germany? I mean, do you have such numbers?
I have less data from Germany, but the data I do have holds there. They're different sites, perhaps, and maybe different. I'd say in the US, a large driver is Meta, maybe less so in Germany, and more native from more legacy media brands who implement those widgets. But it's still certainly a problem in Germany and all the audits that I've seen.
Okay. And what do you think regarding the advertiser awareness of this topic? I mean, how aware is the market in the US and also in other markets of this topic? Because why I'm asking this question, maybe I precise it a little bit. In Germany, my feeling is that the topic is not very, very often talked about, basically. There are special conferences where there's maybe one speech about MFA, but that's it. And the rest of the industry doesn't really talk about it. So what's your experience?
It's very surprising to me because, it's taken up so much space in the conversation in the US. And admittedly, that's where I spend most of my time having the conversations is with folks in my LinkedIn feed. In the US, and it's sort of been beaten like a dead horse in my perception that there's people talked about it for so long that, and I've seen many people take action. I mean, granted, if you go to one of these sites, you'll still see huge brands on them, but at least as much as the ANA's recent programmatic benchmark can attest, it seems like the spend of their members has gone down, which is probably largely US membership. So Could be a bit biased. So if you're saying there's not as much an awareness here, I imagine that the problem is also larger, is sort of like a share of the region's spend.
Okay, get it. So let's talk a little bit about what advertisers now can do. I mean, let's assume that maybe because we don't have better data in Germany, the topic is as bad as in the US. So 10 to 15% of my advertising impressions or spend is waste, basically, right? What can I do now as an advertiser? And maybe we can structure it the way that we differentiate between big and small advertisers. So the ones that have the tools like DSPs and maybe also tools like your tool, or small advertisers who are just using a little bit Google Ads and some other social networks, etc.
Yeah. So there is the most common place people will turn to is to a block list, which is reasonably effective. And I think that's sort of the place anyone of any size could start. Maybe for a smaller advertiser, that's the extent to which they can exercise control. Again, it's based on the tools, but most DSPs, regardless of sort of your spend, will accept a block list and a target list. Target list obviously would be the most effective, but maybe it's not appropriate if you're trying to, you know, do a run.
So target list is a white list, basically, right?
Yes.
So it just, okay. Mm-hmm.
And then there's ways to get more sophisticated even. So like one of the downsides of the block list is that, especially in this, risk type, MFA sites, they can be highly ephemeral since the content is almost entirely syndicated and, as the design is very stuck, they could easily spin up a new site, right? And so then your block list will fail for that new site, unless you have a solution that's constantly up to date and pushing you new versions of your, of the list that should be blocked. Maybe a more effective route, and this is something that's not available to everyone, is to block a seller or seller ID, something like that. So, for example, the problem is very much seller specific. There are like a small number of players doing a large amount of traffic. And for the most part, if you're able to identify who those are and your DSP or your agency will accept those as sort of block items, then you'll be in pretty good shape doing it that way and just monitoring performance in those terms. It's just one of the places, if you just think about it logically, it's like who has the incentive to create fraud or to like inflate spend? It's certainly the seller, right? That's a lot of the time. Fraud is seller specific or publisher specific, and it wouldn't make sense for someone to just randomly send bots to random sites. Like that's when you're measuring bot traffic, it's rarely what you're seeing. It's probably a concerted effort towards someone's end, and many times the incentive falls on the seller.
Okay, get it. But talking about media agencies, I mean, isn't this exactly their job to provide those or get those blacklists? Or do whitelist campaigns? I mean, they're the ones that should care about the advertising spends from the advertisers, right? I mean, it's their job, basically. So what's your experience there? I mean, are they really aware of this topic? Are they doing everything to clean up the campaigns from those sites? Or is there still room for improvement?
You have identified another common area where sort of incentives misalign, which is handing, stewardship of your spend to someone else. They obviously have another incentive to, spend your money by the date it's been prescribed to be spent, right? So again, this comes down to sort of principles. Many agencies will be very principled and they will have on hand, a data or a block list for use across all their clients. And they'll, consider these things. So you don't even have to tell them, hey, I need this additional site list block. However, that's not always going to be the case. And a lot of the time there may be preferred spend deals between an agency and a certain like large scale sales house who has, some percentage of their inventory coming from MFA. And in that situation, especially when you use an agency, it's very important to bake in terms of transparency into the contract, like what you expect in terms of reporting and when you expect it. You should always get, at least a weekly feed of the domains and subdomains where traffic has appeared, or the apps if you're spending on apps, or the pages if you're spending on social. It's like you need to ensure that reporting is expected to come your way. You need to have the terms by which it will come and the cadence at which. And and what is sort of expected to happen when the, you know, the advertiser responds with, you know, requests to block certain sites. Because, you know, someone can submit that request and maybe it doesn't get done. So it's like, it can be more work in certain regards to go through the agency, though they will do a lot of the lifting of actually, you know, pulling the levers for you at the DSP or the social platform. But there's sort of new work that must be done in those cases. It's just, you know, trust but verify. That's what you got
to
do.
So you mean the advertiser needs to check himself also on a URL or placement basis and not just lean back and enjoy spending money from his employer and the agency does it in the like easiest way or in a way like that is with the less resource from agency side.
That's how we kind of got into this situation, because some people, you know, many advertisers took a middle road where it's like they don't want to be the ones reviewing all the reports all the time, but rather they'll pass off, you know, the rating of quality to an IVT vendor, like, you know, IAS, for example. They say, like, you must append this tag to all my creatives, and I'll be reviewing the IVT data. But, you know, going off my earlier point, let's just assume that the traffic is human to these MFA sites, and largely it's classified that way. They're just going to see like high viewability, low IVT rate, you know, A-OK with me. And especially
so they won't detect those sites, right? But it doesn't.
Exactly.
Okay. But nevertheless, talking about ad verification tools, I mean, that's exactly also the space you're in. Don't the big ad verification tools have solutions for this topic as well nowadays?
Yeah, they have sort of been dragged to the table in rating MFA and like ad clutter and stuff, but I think that's a big positive. It's good to see that. I hope they're as effective as you know, someone doing that work themselves to review the reports. It's a good direction for them to go. They largely weren't doing that until this year, so it's hard to say what the effect of that is globally on spend, but certainly a positive trend to see.
Okay. So talking about ad clutter, I mean, that's one of the forms or part of your recognition, right? So
certainly.
If we are going into definition of MFA, what else do you see? I mean, is it just sites full of ad clutter, or do you also see other types of MFA that are not valuable for advertisers?
Yeah, good question. So when we started creating our site list, we didn't start simply looking for arbitrage. We're looking for really trying to be true to the spirit of that phrase, made for advertising. To me, it meant sites that literally have no higher purpose than to collect advertising dollars. They're created with very, you know, low effort in the way that the content is written, very low effort with the way the site is designed. They often are mirrors of each other. Like the new MFA site will look much like the last one, with even the same articles, maybe different headlines. So those are things that we were noticing. And, you know, paid traffic just being one aspect of that, especially as organic traffic gets harder to find for publishers. I think we'll see strategies evolve. One thing we're already seeing is that there's a lot of SEO spam. Like, new sites are being created at an astounding volume, and many of them are clearly not written by people. They have like no hand in making it. They're using the same stock WordPress theme, using the same plugins. And this will really only be a problem to you if you don't use a target list, or especially if you're like running, you're doing run of network on, say, you know, Google Display Network, which, you know, the onboarding requirements for AdSense are not terribly high. Like, maybe you'll get a clawback for some activity they flag, you know, after the fact, but maybe you won't. And so, like, I see a lot more sites trying to get the ad dollars from the people who don't use target lists. And that's definitely a risk you would run. And then there's also just, you know, ad clutter on a site, which is considered premium. That's sort of the hardest thing, I think, to talk about. And it goes to people's taste. Like, to your point, is like, if it's a human, does it matter? You know, maybe not, but the thing that we identified in that situation was that, you know, the ad experience was exceptionally bad. So human or not, like, they can barely see it. So those are the things to consider even on premium sites. And that's where the conversation may have, you know, gotten uncomfortable at times, where certain rating systems, you know, not ours, but it was talked about, you know, in Ad Monsters, for example, that premium inventory flagged as MFA based solely on the presence of ad clutter. So we have to temper those decisions based on additional things like, you know, history of journalistic excellence, or like how many like real people do they have working there that are writing new content that are passionate about the topics they write about.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
That's been a lot harder to nail down with metrics, but something we have started to do. And it's
and also the refresh rate, you told me, right?
Definitely the refresh rate. Yeah, like DSP guidance is mostly, you know, for display, you want to see 30-second refresh. And we see that's not the case across like large swaths of the internet. Yeah. A lot of the topic of the day is, you know, in-stream versus out-stream video. And it has, you know, tangential relations to MFA, like in the sense that almost all the MFA video inventory is out-stream, as opposed to, you know, what people want to buy these days, which is, you know, sound on, front of view, you know, in stream. It's like main content, a YouTube-like experience, and it never delivered in these MFA sites.
Okay, get it. So question regarding the solution again, how I can tackle this problem as an advertiser. I mean, do I now, besides checking the domains, the placements, the URLs together with my agency, doing blacklists or whitelists, what else can I do? I mean, especially talking about a software solution like yours, is this now like something I would do as an advertiser, or are you plugged into SSPs on the supply side? Or so should I care about an additional solution like yours is the question behind it.
I mean, obviously, I'd love everyone to buy our solution. We thought it maybe most ideal as a buy-side solution because they regularly have to rate huge amounts of domains for especially like DSPs. But advertisers too, like especially when if they haven't been regularly checking their delivery reports, the first time they do, they'll probably find, you know, tens of thousands of domains, many of which, you know, who can put human eyes on that many? We have packages, I'll just say, like speaking to our product specifically for a little bit, you know, we have packages that go as low as like $500 a month, and you can rate a couple thousand domains, like maybe the top from that report. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have them that go much higher, obviously, if you need to regularly rate like all the domains in existence. So we try to have packages that work for everyone. But even so, like let's say you're the only person working in paid media at your, you know, small company. There's no better time spent than sort of just looking over those top, let's say, 50 rows. Like, that's pretty ambitious. Top 25 rows. A lot of the time when we're looking at where has someone gone wrong, like spent a lot of money on MFA, it's the suspect is near the top of that report in terms of volume. So like, even if it's just on a weekly basis reviewing the top sites in terms of volume up to say like the top 50, putting eyes on them and just making sure they're okay with you, that's something that can go a long way. Let's just assume you have no additional budget for tools or blocklist. Like, just getting hands-on with the top few can be really, really helpful. Unfortunately, like, some things that these sites do to avoid detection would mitigate that. So maybe you do need like a, you know, someone to give you additional help. But like, you know, things to consider is the top site in your delivery report something that anyone has heard of, or like, does it have a reputation? That is something you'll see, is that like, well, I spent more money here than I did on, you know, the major news site in my region. It's like, what is this site? You know, why is it all just pictures of dogs or people with nip slips or whatever? It's like, that's
Sounds very easy, but it's not everybody's doing it, right? So is your solution plug and play, or do I have like to download a CSV list something and then upload into your solution, and your solution is rating it then as MFA or not MFA?
Yeah, so we try to be quite agnostic in terms of you know, like what platforms it's appropriate for. So as a result, you can just bring a list of domains as a CSV, and you'll get back a list of domains as a CSV with a ton of data appended. So you can, yeah, it's plug and play with pretty much everything in that sense. That, like, you know, CSVs are common currency among all the platforms of, you know, domains. And totally right to your point. You can upload a list and get them rated back as like, yes, it has MFA. That's just one part of what we do. But you know, there's a tons of dimensions of quality and risk that we rate for. And yeah, you would get them all just as a simple export. All you need to do is bring a list of domains. And we've already pre-compiled the data. We don't run tags or anything. It's all first party gathered by our crawlers and human experts.
Okay, great. But I like your solution and your approach. So everybody out there, if you want to check it out, contact Rocky on his LinkedIn profile.
Yeah, I'll give you a free audit.
I'll
give anyone the free audit. We do that for anyone who reaches out. There's like, want a size of the problem. It's like, do I have a problem? I'll tell you. And if not, you know, Godspeed, you're doing great.
Okay, great. Sounds good. So talking about the whole topic of MFA and looking into the future a little bit. So what's your outlook? Will it get worse, or will the industry, the guys at Google, Meta, and so on, tackle this topic effectively in the future? What do you think?
That's a very good question. If I were an oracle, I would have a very certain answer for you. Unfortunately, I'm too pragmatic, so I'll speak in, vague statements. It would be nice to see. I think it will be hard to expect Google to tackle it head on, because they have a, complementary supply network to their buy-side platform, which, if they kick sites off that, they lose possible inventory to be sold. And as I mentioned, I think one of the larger problems going forward will not so much be, cut and dry arbitrage, but more exploitation of organic traffic, either from SEO and together with the huge explosion of consumer AI solutions. Which can be used to, generate fake sites. It seems to me that people will get smarter about gaming search. Again, it's like the story of ad monetized web has largely been driven by Google search capabilities, and I don't see that changing very much, but it's more adapting. I think we're sort of in an uncomfortable period now between traditional search and Google's use of AI in search. And we've already seen some companies doing very well at, coming to the top of their AI suggested results. And I think we will see just sort of a fundamental shift in what the, middle and long tail has to do to get noticed by people doing those relevant searches. So that's sort of my long way to say, it's going to be an evolving topic. And I think it'll largely be focused around how traffic is delivered to sites based on Google updates.
Get it. Thank you, Rocky. Very interesting topic. And as I said, I think it should be, or most advertisers, at least in Germany, should be more aware of. So I hope that we were successful bringing this topic today to advertisers with this episode. If you have any questions out there, please feel free to contact me or Rocky. And I say thank you again, Rocky, for joining this episode. Very interesting. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.